It's FSN.
Thank you, Simon.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Well, welcome to the program. It's Thursday's program, December 3rd, 2020. How you doing? Coming up this hour, Piers Corbyn, the scientist, the physicist, will return to the program. Lot to get into with Piers, not least, of course, his recent court appearances for breach of lockdown, but more besides. And in the second hour, I'll be joined by a nurse called Jenny Lowes. I came across Jenny on national radio a few weeks ago. Worked in the NHS for many years. She's an educator and was a recruiter for the NHS as well. She's in private practice now, and she's got some interesting opinions on vaccines, on do not resuscitate orders, and lots more besides. Nice lady, very bright, very articulate. Jenny Lowes in the second hour of the programme. Right, but before that, this. I've had very little time to prepare this, but I have, as best as I could, I've been reviewing documents at the speed of light in the run-up to the programme. Now, I was contacted by a specialist nurse in the NHS. Pay attention to this. This is very important. And I don't mean in any way to patronise you. A specialist nurse in the NHS, let's call him Martin, contacted me to say, Richie, I'm involved in getting the new COVID vaccines out to our staff. Okay? You will be aware that the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine has been approved by the regulatory authority in this country. And the first people to get it, and I think it'll begin very early next week, Monday, Tuesday next week, it's in transit apparently, this vaccine. The first to get it will be NHS so-called frontline staff. So Martin got in touch with me and he sent me three Pfizer vaccine documents, which he tells me are confidential, and nobody outside of NHS workers and MHRA people, nobody else would be in possession of these documents at the moment. He sent them to me. He said, Richie, I'm very concerned about them, and I'd like you to put out there the information on these documents. I can't do it because I'd lose my job. Okay? So again, Martin, specialist nurse in the NHS, he is involved in getting the new vaccines out to the staff. And like everybody else doing that, he was given three documents, and I'll tell you about them now as quick as I can. Medicines and Healthcare Products Regulatory Agency, MHRA, is the regulatory body for medicine approval in this country. And they sent three documents out to staff yesterday, December 2nd. The three are entitled, the first one is entitled Conditions of Authorization under Regulation 174, that basically deals with the conditions for releasing, for authorising this new Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine. That's the first document, right, which is interesting. The second document is entitled Information for Healthcare Professionals. Okay? That's basically an information pack for healthcare professionals who will be administering the new vaccine. And the third document, you probably won't be surprised, is a document which contains information for recipients. Right? Anybody who gets the vaccine will get an information sheet, and we are in possession of these documents today. So you've got the authorization document, which explains how it got authorized. You've got a document which explains to healthcare professionals about the jab. And then a third one, which explains to Joe Public about the jab. And here's the problem. And it's a fairly big problem. On the document given to healthcare professionals is, you won't be surprised even, a list of possible or potential side effects of the vaccine. I'm not going to get into them now. They're fairly standard in terms of what you would expect to read. You know, a rash, pain in the arm, little bit of nausea, that sort of thing. But on the document given to healthcare professionals, those who will administer the jab, there is something about fertility. It clearly states that the impact of the new Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine on fertility is unknown. It is unknown whether COVID-19 mRNA vaccine has an impact on fertility. The problem is, on the fact sheet that will be given to every man, woman and child in the country who will receive the vaccine, there is no mention of this whatsoever. None. And that is a stunning revelation. And Martin said to me, the NHS specialist nurse, he said, Richie, I've brought this up with my immediate supervisor. I have told my immediate supervisor that the recipient of the vaccine will not be giving informed consent to take the vaccine because they won't know anything about fertility. Now, I'm not coming on here today to say to you that the COVID-19 mRNA vaccine will have any impact on fertility because I'm not an irresponsible broadcaster. I don't know. I haven't a Scooby-Doo. But neither does the MHRA in this country. And the MHRA is telling those who will administer the jab that it's unknown whether it has any effect on fertility, but there's no mention of it for the recipients. So when Joe Bloggs gets the jab in his arm, or her arm, and looks at the fact sheet, there's no mention of it. And Martin said to me, Richie, I'm concerned that this vaccine might cause fertility issues that might not come to light for 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 years. Why mention it to the healthcare professionals? It's not mentioned to the recipients. I mentioned to my supervisor, I can't be telling our staff here, have this vaccine. Supervisor said, wind your neck in. It's astonishing stuff. I've sent a copy of the documents to Dr. Vernon Coleman. I sent a copy of them to Piers Corbyn, who's going to be on with me in a few moments. And if I can figure out later on how to do it, because these are PDF files, I will share them on Facebook and on Twitter. Staggering to tell those administering the vaccine that you don't know whether the vaccine has any impact on fertility, but you don't mention it in the information sheet given to the recipients. And thanks to Martin for sending me that today. That is bombshell information. It's an exclusive, I think. Not that that bloody well matters. It's not about exclusives and it's not about me. But I don't think anybody else has this information today. These documents are legitimate and they're dated the 2nd of December. They were given yesterday afternoon to those who will be overseeing the rollout or the administering of these vaccines to NHS staff. Martin is a specialist nurse in the NHS. And he's begged me, Martin isn't his real name, not to give any clues to where he might be in the country or to his identity. He feels very strongly that for releasing these documents, he might be in danger of losing his job. Can't say any more on that for the moment. I'll get reaction on it though. Speaking to Piers Corbyn about it shortly. I've emailed Dr. Vernon Coleman with the documents. I've not heard back from him yet. Presumably, we'll hear from him soon enough. Thanks to Martin for that. Think about it again. I'm going to say it again. Three documents. The first one explaining how it was authorised for use. Temporary authorisation. Second one is information to be given to healthcare professionals. Third document to be given to recipients. Not to be given, but information on the third document is to be told to recipients. Healthcare professionals are told, we don't know if this has any impact on fertility. The recipients, no mention of fertility to them whatsoever. Amazing. A number of you have been in touch with me today to say, Richie, will you play a little bit of audio from Professor Jonathan Bell from Oxford University? He was on Channel 4 News with Jon Snow last week. And he said something extraordinary, Richie, about sterilization. Please play the audio. Here it is.
But then don't forget, these vaccines are unlikely to completely sterilize a population. They're very likely to have an effect which works in a percentage, say 60 or 70%, we'll have to look quite carefully, and the regulators will have to look quite carefully to make sure that it's done what we need it to do before it gets approved. So there will be a delay between the outcome of the trial and a decision whether it can be approved.
Now, at some stage, Jon Snow does look like he's a little bit shocked by what he heard and thinks about asking him to clarify what he said.
But then don't forget, these vaccines are unlikely to completely sterilize a population. They're very likely to have an effect which works in a percentage, say... 60%.
Now, I know you're not going to like this. I know you're not going to like this, but he might not have meant that. You have to consider that. He could have been thinking about two or three different things at the same time, and you might think that's a Freudian slip. It seems that people online seem to think it's a Freudian slip. I think he's just made a mistake. Vaccinate, I don't think he meant to say sterilise, but it sent some of you absolutely doolally today. Fair enough. You think what you want of that. I'm not sure that he really means sterilise, even if he said it. Right. It's 14 minutes past the hour. We'd love to take the vaccine live on telly, say politicians, but we can't deprive the needy. Sure. The BBC this morning had a Jean-Claude Van Damme on. Well, they had him on the radio. I am the biggest child of all time. I know, you're serious for 3 minutes and then... Right, Jean-Claude Van Damme. I think he's the deputy chief medical officer. Chief, yeah. And he's an idiot. And he was on BBC this morning being interviewed by Rachel Burden and Anita McVeigh. In fact, they were fielding questions from the public for this guy, the deputy chief medical officer, Jonathan Van Damme. We like to call him Jean-Claude Van Damme. There's never been a bigger fool in the history of governance, in the history of medical experts. Oh God, there was a time when we'd have been lampooning, laughing at, satirising, mocking Jean-Claude Van Damme, but not anymore. These guys are taken seriously. They're so deferential to this guy, so fawning, so pathetic. Here's Rachel Burden.
Well, thank you so much. And in that sense, and there are loads of caveats around this vaccine, Professor Van Damme, can you tell us where are we at? A lot of people have asked this in the penalty shootout at the moment. We love your analogy. So at what stage are we?
Oh, Jesus Christ. I remember when politicians and even academics and even medical experts were treated with disdain and contempt by presenters. I don't mean rudeness, but contempt. You took the sceptical position. The minute you opened the microphone, you wanted to get stuck into them. Now, no. Oh, we love you. We love you, Jonathan. You're amazing and we love your football analogies. Of course, Jean-Claude Van Damme, who's delighted to be on telly, loving his newfound celebrity. He can't wait to deliver a new football analogy.
If you want me to do a football analogy, then I have thought about this.
Oh, we do, quick.
I would say that, you know, it's clear in the first half, the away team gave us an absolute battering. And what we've done now is it's the 70th minute. They got a goal. And in the 70th minute, we've now got an equaliser. Okay. We've got to hold our nerve now, see if we can get another goal and nick it. But the key thing is not to lose it, not to throw it away at this point, because we've got a point on the board and we've got the draw. So from that perspective...
We have a draw now.
What I'm saying is that we need more vaccines, but we also need people to realise that these are not an instant ticket out of anywhere at the moment. We are in for some hard winter months where people must continue to follow the guidance.
Continue to follow the guidance. It doesn't matter whether you've had the vaccine or not, or the second jab or not. Continue to follow the guidance. This guy has been saying in recent days that you might be wearing masks for many, many years to come. Jonathan Van Damme there. It's 18 minutes past the hour. Now, the documents I mentioned earlier on, the MHRA documents pertaining to the authorization of the vaccine and the documents for healthcare professionals and for recipients are online now at gov.uk gov.uk. They were published there last night and updated today. I'm just tweeting a link out to them now so you can see them for yourselves. It's an extraordinary thing to see that. Again, mention of fertility for healthcare professionals in terms of the impact on fertility is unknown, but no mention whatsoever of that. But I would say bombshell about fertility to the recipients of said vaccine. We're going to be talking more about this in the course of the programme. 19 minutes past five it is now. Speaking of Piers Corbyn, he was on the Ian Collins talk radio show today, and here's a little flavour of how that went. Piers will be with me in a few minutes.
There's no evidence for that.
His aim is to reduce world
population. He wants to reduce. You know that. You've ever heard him say he wants to reduce the population.
Reduce world population.
That's what his aim is to do. That's so his prime aim is based on reducing. Why does he want to do that, Piers?
Well, he may have many aims, but one of them is to make large amounts of money.
We can't really make any more money, can he, than he's got. He's worth £89 billion.
I'm sure he could make more money, and he is. Yeah. The net value of Gates, Zuckerberg and Bezos has gone up by £150 billion in the last 6 months.
No, I understand that.
It's £20 for every man, woman and child.
Yeah.
So they're winning and we're losing by this fraud and scam. You see, whatever COVID-19 is or not, there are cures for whatever people have been getting, namely chloroquine and zinc, which are much cheaper than any vaccine. So the example you gave of somebody potentially ill or something, I would say, well, take chloroquine and zinc and you'll be okay.
You do know how nuts you sound, Piers, don't you? You are aware of that.
Well, I do know how...
I mean, I'm being kind here, because another way to describe it would be that you are dangerous and you are bonkers and you should probably keep shtum whenever asked about something that you clearly have zero information or knowledge about.
No, I have plenty of knowledge and I am a scientist. And
I'm sure in your days, in your particular area of science, I'm sure you were... You were a standout student and all the rest of it, but something's happened, hasn't it?
Yeah, that passes for acceptable conduct now on mainstream radio programmes, insulting people and laughing at them. And not long after he'd left the programme, Collins continued to insult him and mock him and laugh at him with listeners phoning in. Strange thing is, though, they started out with Collins expressing... incredulity at any claim that Bill Gates was interested in depopulation, that vaccines would have anything to do with that. That's a bit strange, really, because this has been online for years.
First, we've got population. The world today has 6.8 billion people. That's headed up to about 9 billion. Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, healthcare, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%. But there we see an increase of about 1.3.
Well, that said it all, really, didn't it? And on this thing about wearing face masks and regulations and rules and social distancing going on forever, Spiked Online's Brendan O'Neill was on the Julia Hartley Brewer programme, also on Talk Radio. Listen.
How are we going to... get our right not to wear masks back? How are we going to get our right to see our families when we darn well want to without having to close the curtains and hope the neighbours don't notice?
That's the big question all of us have got to ask. How do we get these rights back? Because, you know, this is a point many of us made over the past few months, which is that it's very easy for governments to take your rights away. It's very hard for you to get them back. And that's the kind of thing we have to focus on now. In relation to the masks thing, the idea that it's fine, everyone should just wear masks for the next few years, I think people underestimate how much masks, what a devastating impact they have on everyday life, on social life. You can't smile at the elderly woman on the street as you walk past. You can't do a reassuring smile to someone as you open a door for them. You can't have a chit chat in a shop with someone. I mean, it really does restrict There's so many aspects of social life, of social engagement, of people connecting with one another. And the idea that you would want to keep that barrier between people for years to come, I find that terrifying. What terrifies me, that the phrase that I think is the most scary phrase in the English language right now is the new normal. This idea that we have to go into a new normal with all these rules. Who defines what this new normal is? What about those of us who reject it? These are the kind of things I think we need to be talking about. Mm.
I would agree with that. Right, this is the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford, here in the northwest of the UK. The time is 23 and a half minutes past the hour. Joined by Piers Corbyn in around about 3 minutes' time. Don't go anywhere. Right, Stevie Wonder on the Richie Allen Radio Show. Piers Corbyn will be with me in about 3 minutes' time. He's running a couple of minutes late, but he'll be there. Just to reiterate, the documents given to me by Martin, they were emailed to me overnight through the website, by the way. I get such a volume of emails through the website, as my mate Hayden Hewitt will testify to. I don't see all of them. But the documents are online now. They went up on the gov.uk website overnight and they were amended today. So that information, I don't have to put the PDF files online. It's there for everybody to see now. And you will see that Martin, the NHS nurse, has every right to be concerned about informed consent when you're given information to healthcare professionals, which includes the bold and blatant statement that the impact of the vaccine on fertility is unknown. But you are not including that in the information for the recipient. That's beyond the pale. And it's the sort of information that should be being put to various government spokesmen and women this afternoon, this evening on talk radio and on live news programmes, but it won't be. It won't be. Why are you telling healthcare professionals that you don't know what impact it'll have on fertility? Why are you doing that and not telling people who are getting it into their feckin' arms that you don't know whether it'll have an impact on fertility or not? As I said, the information is now, I understand now that it is on gov.uk. It went up there overnight, gov.uk. I've put a link to it on Facebook and on Twitter. Share it widely. Three documents. The authorisation document, the conditions of authorisation, the information for recipients and the information for healthcare professionals. And I think the aforementioned, the great Piers Corbyn, is live now in London. Welcome back, my old friend. How are you?
I'm very well.
What do you make of those documents? Now, before you give us your opinion on them, I want to reiterate, when Martin sent them to me, Martin said, Richie, I'm sending them to you. Nobody has them. But overnight, they have gone on the government website. They were amended this afternoon, apparently. But they're up there. What do you make of it? Is Martin, the nurse, right to be concerned?
Well, absolutely, yes. I mean, as I understand it, one document talks about, i.e. the one that's not for the public, talks about unknown dangers of causing infertility, and the public document doesn't mention these things. So there's some sort of cover-up going on.
Might be an oversight, no?
An oversight? Well, I don't know if it could be an oversight. But curious, these sort of oversights are always in a certain direction, i.e. the public are not told things.
See, what I'd like to know, it's very difficult for me to do this because we only got this information this afternoon. I'd like to look at other vaccines that have been made available in recent years to see, is there any mention of fertility in those vaccines? I'd like to know that. But still, look, I agree with you.
Yeah.
It's astonishing to me that you would tell healthcare professionals that you don't know what it might do to fertility, but you wouldn't mention fertility at all to the person getting the jab. That's not good.
No, it's completely monstrous. Well, of course, you see, Bill Gates has explicitly stated that he believes in world population reduction. And he did try out vaccines in Africa, which did reduce women's fertility. So, you know, that is his aim. I mean, he believes there's too many people in the world,
and there
especially in Africa. So, you know, it's a racist, eugenicist policy. And they're not going to announce to us they've got a racist, eugenicist policy, or they're not going to make it very public anyway.
I played a bit of audio earlier of you of you speaking with Ian Collins today.
Yes.
And Collins was he was rude enough when you were on, but he was particularly rude after you'd left the program.
Oh, really?
Which is a shame, because I like Collins as I think he's a very capable broadcaster and I think he's a very good presenter. But one of the things that he wanted to belittle you about was the claim that Gates was interested in depopulation. But we've seen a clip going back years where Gates talks about how improvements in healthcare and vaccinations will help bring about a reduction in population. It's out there for everybody.
That's right. It's explicit, and we know that the vaccines he's trialled do this. I said to Collins as well, of course, these things should not be called vaccines. They are not vaccines. The vaccine is from vacar, cow, which was using cowpox injected into humans to make immunity possibly to smallpox. And then it's changed to injecting a virus to develop antibodies. But these modern vaccines do not inject a virus. They have not isolated the so-called COVID virus, if it exists. They're injecting something else, which I correctly described as poisons and including infertility drugs. So, people have to, get out of their heads the idea that this is a nice little helpful vaccine as developed by Jenner, 100 years ago. It is something else. It's a Dr. Strangelove satanic attack on people's rights to their own bodies, and it includes things which will modify DNA.
And can I just mention something?
It's not a vaccine. So we've got a competition from StopNewNormal.net to find another name for them, like infertility jab or Dr. Strangelove hit. There's all sorts of things you could think of, but they're not vaccines. This is not a vaccine.
Can I just say something before we move on? Piers obviously has been involved in a very high-profile court case about breaching lockdown, and I want to say this, and this is from the heart, and he hasn't asked me to do this, he has not, but he's not got a pot to piss in now, because for weeks and months he's been spending a fortune, every penny he has, on materials, on leaflets, on newspapers, on placards, on ink, on printers, and he's in some considerable debt. So I would say to my listeners, get on to stopnewnormal.net, get on to weatheraction.com. And weatheraction.org, is it, or weatheraction.com? Remind me.
Sorry, weatheraction.com. That's
weatheraction.com.
Yeah. The guy went to forecast there as well.
I'm going to say this. If you were planning on subscribing this month to the Richie Allen radio show, if you're planning on sending me some money, don't send it to me. Send it to Piers Corbyn, please.
Oh, wow.
And do that. Okay, weatheraction.com, stopnewnormal.net. He's been out there in the piss and rain, getting harassed by police officers and everybody else, trying to get this information out there. And there's not many like him. So if you can support him, support him. I wanted to point out as well, Martin got back in touch with me to thank me for putting out the information. And an important thing to mention again, when Martin said to his supervisor, because Martin is a specialist nurse who's supposed to be giving this to his colleagues, to be giving him the vaccine. And Martin said, I can't in good conscience give it to the colleagues of mine without emphasising this fertility thing. And he was told to wind his neck in by his supervisor.
Really?
Yeah.
Really. So the NHS hierarchy is, permitting or organising the injection of things which are, dangerous, and they don't want to reveal the facts.
Yeah, but there's compartmentalisation here, isn't there, Piers? Because the supervisor won't have a clue. You see, I know you know this, but a lot of my listeners, God love them, they think that everybody is in on it. Everybody is not in on it. You will find most people in the NHS, they think that the vaccine is the second coming, don't they? They really do. They're delighted. They're not doing anything wrong. They think it's brilliant and they want to give it to people. And it's not their fault. But can I just ask you this, and you can take as long as you want to explain this. I need to challenge you on something you did say to Ian Collins. Because even before we saw the documents, which we saw today, you have been concerned about this particular vaccine's impact on fertility.
Yes.
And Collins challenged you on that. And I want to challenge you. Is there any hard information that we can point to as to why people should be worried about an impact on fertility? Because I can't see any evidence about this current vaccine that we could say, right, it will affect your fertility. For me, I have to be honest, I can't see it. What do you think?
My understanding is there is, and I could just find you one of our leaflets on the matter. But the vaccines which were put before, related vaccines, by someone else is now looking for this, might be in... the Bill Gates operations in India and Africa did reduce the fertility of girls specifically. And in terms of deaths and so forth, they found in Guinea-Bissau, they had two samples of people, all youngest girls. And the ones who had a vaccine died from other things at 10 times the rate of people who didn't have the vaccine.
Right.
And that was a vaccine for diphtheria. Now, they might have been cured of dangers of diphtheria, I don't know, but they died of other things because the vaccine damaged their immune system.
The vaccine contained a drug, didn't it, that is known to be an anti-fertility drug?
Yes.
That's what happened, yeah. That's not something you can mistake, is it? That's not something that you could just make a mistake doing.
No, no. It's deliberate. You see, Gates admits that. I mean, they've said so, and they believe that the world population has to be substantially reduced. I've been to meetings in the Royal Society where they'd forgotten I was listening. And they came up with some figures. They said the biggest problem is in sub-Saharan Africa. And they said world population has to go down by a third. But in England, it's only a quarter. Now, of course, I know which quarter I'm in from their point of view. So, you know, it's pretty worrying stuff. I mean, a lot of people can't believe that their government would be promoting and supporting, either consciously or unconsciously, such bad or evil things.
If but it is see, bad... Is that the fire alarm now gone off? It's all happening now at Piers's office. Is that because...
Probably just a trial.
They always say that, don't they? They say nobody listens. Nobody believes the... Nobody walks out when the alarm is being tested. And then when there is a fire, everybody dies. Piers Corbyn is our guest. I don't need to introduce Piers or tell you anything about him. Is it because the truth is compartmentalisation? If you are right, and that this is an evil depopulation agenda. There will be some people listening who agree with that. There will be some people who don't agree with it. But if you are right, it must be the case that even the government wouldn't know anything about it. Why would Boris Johnson know about it?
Well, there's plenty of things they wouldn't tell them. I mean, in my opinion, that about brainwashing is that the institution called Parliament is, of course, subject to the biggest brainwashing around.
Piers, do you want to go outside for a bit, just in case that's a real fire? I don't want you to be sitting here. Go and find out, and let me know when you're back, and we'll pick it up again in a moment. No panic, that's the beauty of live radio. Piers Corr, I don't want Piers to catch fire. And then we read on the Daily Mail tomorrow that Piers is... there'll be a photograph of Piers running down, I don't know where his office is, running down Piccadilly Circus in flames, and he was talking to the BBG, so we'll let him figure it out there. That's the thing, isn't it? Just to bring you up to speed, the MHRA has published information about how the new COVID vaccine, the Pfizer-Moderna vaccine, was approved, was authorised, temporarily authorised. So we have that information now. And also, it's provided information for healthcare professionals and information for vaccine recipients. And there's a big concern. And I was contacted by a specialist nurse in the NHS called Martin, who said that he was incredibly concerned that the healthcare professionals charged with administering the drug, the vaccine, were given information that stated pretty blatantly the impact on fertility of the COVID-19 vaccine is unknown. No idea. And that information is not on the sheet that contains what you're supposed to tell the recipient. There's got to be a problem there. There's something very wrong with that. This isn't me coming on here to tell you that the Moderna Pfizer vaccine will have an impact on fertility, because I would be irresponsible to do that because I have no idea. But seeing those documents, even if I wasn't somebody who'd spent years speaking to doctors and healthcare professionals and academics about the dangers of vaccines, which I have done, if I was an ordinary, now I am an ordinary man, but if I was a lay person who'd never looked into vaccines, I wouldn't touch the COVID Pfizer vaccine with a barge pole because they've mentioned fertility specifically. Specifically. But what I need to find out, and maybe you can help, maybe you can do a bit of temporary or part-time production for the BBG. When we look at vaccines for other things, vaccines for meningitis, vaccines for the flu, is there a mention in the information sheet? Is there a mention of fertility at all? I'd like to know that, you see. I don't like to jump the shark, get all excited. But I am stunned that they would mention fertility to those given the jab and keep that information away from those receiving it. That's not conjecture. That's not me adding two and two and making six. That is disgraceful. It's disgraceful. And when you hear the MHRA, and when you hear Boris Johnson and Matt Hancock and their lackeys telling you that every avenue has been followed, every pathway has been looked into, and this is a safe vaccine, don't worry about it. And when they tell you things like adverse effects will show primarily, no they don't, they say that adverse effects will show within the first 30 minutes. And they say those will be the usual, bit of soreness, bit of nausea, bit of a rash, blah, blah, blah. But when they talk about fertility, what they're saying is they can't possibly know. Again, this isn't conjecture, this is fact. They cannot possibly know what the long-term potential side effects of the Pfizer-Moderna vaccine are. How could they? It's only been in trial for a few weeks. Trials, I should say. It's been wrapped up and a bow has been tied around it in the space of a measly few months. So they can't observe trial subjects over a period of 1, 2, 3, 4 years. They don't know what it might do to you in the longer term. Therefore, I say again, I'm a bit animated today, you'd have to be insane to take the vaccine, wouldn't you? You'd have to be off your head. 16 minutes to the top of the hour. Piers is still gone. It's all kicking off today. Madness. Thanks for your tweets, by the way. Lots of them. Bombshell stuff, isn't it? Isn't it? Tell the people who administer the jabs, tell the doctors that you don't know what impact it has on fertility. But don't tell the person getting the jab. It's astonishing. Thanks for all your tweets. To follow what people are tweeting me, where it says search Twitter, put Richie Allen Show, all one word. Press enter and you will see what people are tweeting to me. Yeah. All right. Okay. Right, while we're waiting to see if Piers comes back or not, we might as well take another tune and chill for a bit. As I said, keep the tweets coming in. We will be speaking to Jenny Lowes in the second hour. Really interesting lady. Spent a considerable amount of her career working in the NHS as a nurse. Not only that, but she also worked as an NHS recruiter. Not only that, but she worked in education for the NHS, educating nurses overseas. She's now working as a private nurse. I came across Jenny, so I did, on national radio a couple of weeks back, where she was speaking very eloquently about why her former colleagues in the NHS might be concerned about the rollout of vaccines. But she's also got some interesting thoughts on do not resuscitate orders. That's a big news story, of course, today as well. I've not got any tune lined up now. This is bloody typical, isn't it? So we'll just grab the handiest one that's there and we'll take that. We might have Piers Corbyn back, we might not. There was a fire alarm going off as we were speaking, so we had to leave the building. although he did reluctantly. Here's Desiree then, back with more on your Richie Allen Show. The time, 14 minutes to the top of the hour. Yeah, 10 minutes to the top of the hour. We might have Piers back in the house there. Piers Corbyn was on the programme, but as well as getting about 20 phone calls during the course of the conversation, the alarm went off in the background and he had to skedaddle out of the building and see what was going on, I suppose. So I'm trying to call him back and we might have him now. You're back.
Hello.
You're back. So the building isn't burning then?
No. It was a real false alarm. It wasn't a practice. It was a alarm, but there was nothing wrong. In fact, years ago, I turned it off years ago, and I did the same today. But we did check because I know the cupboard where we can turn it off and on.
That's so old school, that.
Yes, it's these things do go wrong, but we did check the building.
Listen, we must mention...
The fire brigade will come along anyway. They're busy checking.
Oh, they will come along anyway. You've had some success, of course. You received several cautions and fines over the last number of months because you were exercising your human right to go where you want to go. And to speak,
7 arrests, to be precise.
7 bloody arrests. And to your credit, you were complimentary about the respect and courtesy you were shown by the old Bill, who are just, I suppose, doing what...
Well. Once I was arrested, yes. Before that, of course, there's bits of ructions with the public. But once they'd arrested me, they were always very polite. Yeah.
And what about the cases then? What about the case? Because I heard you talking to Ian Collins about this today. It's gone your way.
Yes. I've had 7 arrests. The police dropped the charges completely in one of them, which was in Sheffield, leaving 6. The first 2... have just been tried, so there's 4 to go. Of the first 2 that have just been tried, one of them was dismissed, and the second one I was found guilty but got a absolute discharge. So basically this is, that's the same as saying acquittal, but there was a technical guilt because the magistrate deemed that the police had in fact done enough to satisfy the Human Rights Act, something we challenge, so we may indeed appeal on this point, but a absolute discharge is the best result you can get from anything technically guilty, if you want to call it that.
Fair enough. We've got some other important information coming in, and it's from our nurse friend Martin.
Okay.
Martin says, if you go to medicines.org.uk/EMC Electronic Medicines Compendium, you do get the summary of product characteristics for all vaccines available in the UK.
Yes.
Martin says, if you look at Gardasil, for example, they do mention fertility, but they state that in animal trials no effects were noted. Wait for this. However, Electronic Medicines Compendium, it says there are other vaccines that state no fertility data is available. But it's really worth noting there is no other vaccine ever made like the mRNA one for COVID. It's experimental in nature, says Martin. So there is information on...
Oh, hang on. There's a farmer wants to say something to me. Hang on.
Farmer is there and everything. This is like... I love live radio. You never... It's like Sally Field said in that great Robert Zemeckis film. Live radio is like a box of chocolates, Forrest. You never know what you're going to get. Mama always had a way of explaining things to me, is what Forrest said then. Piers Corbyn is on. If you've just joined the programme, there was a fire alarm. He left the building reluctantly. He came back and claimed live on air that he was going to breach about 500,000 fire safety regulations by disabling the alarm. He did say that, didn't he? I think I heard him say that. As clever as the man is, he's very eccentric. But that's why we love him. But while he comes back, having dealt with the fireman, medicines.org.uk/EMC has a list of information of product characteristics for all vaccines in the UK. Some mention fertility, some don't. Some say no fertility data is available. The brand new Pfizer-Moderna jab, the claim is the impact or the effect on fertility is unknown. And that information is only being made available for healthcare professionals. It's not being told to the punters. I'd love to be able to hear Piers and the firemen chatting away there. It's coming up for 5 minutes to the top. I'm leaving the microphone open. You never know what we might hear. Brilliant. And let me squeeze in something there now. Okay. Yeah, I want to mention again. Are you there, Piers? He's not there yet, is he? I want to mention again something I mentioned earlier on. The man is broke and is in rent arrears at the office for weatheraction.com. And he's fairly proud. And he mentioned this to me today. And I said, look, I'll ask our listeners. If you ordinarily send a couple of quid a month to the Richie Allen radio show and you haven't done it in December, don't send it to me. Send it to Piers Corbyn through weatheraction.com or go to stopnewnormal.net and help him out. Because for several months now, every penny he has, and I know this to be true, has been ploughed into printing materials, leaflets, posters, and travelling around the country and everything else that goes with it to talk to people about lockdown and about vaccines and about 5G and everything else. So help him out if you can. You back?
I'm back, yes.
Hey, good.
Farman came along to talk about the rules and all that. But he was very helpful and happy that we'd intervened and that they've checked everything out.
Good
and,
man. I hope you didn't tell him what you told me, which was that you were planning on disabling the alarm. Oh, God. Listen, we've got about 10 minutes left. It's been a bit disjointed today, but that's the beauty.
And I just want to say thank you very much indeed for your little plug just now. That's much appreciated because, these are hard times.
You do enough for other people, mate. And and I know that. I know the spoofers from the genuine people. And whether you're right or wrong in terms of your beliefs about 5G or climate, that's irrelevant. You have every right to have your say. You've earned the right to have your say. You're an academic man. You're a physicist. You're a meteorologist. And I think you're terrific. I don't care what anybody on national radio says. Listen, in the 10 minutes we have left then, it looks like, I hate to be pessimistic, it looks like they're just going to start giving this to people next week. And sadly, despite your increasingly high profile, and you have a high profile these days, sadly, it seems that people are so pissed off of lockdown, Piers, that they can't wait to get the bloody thing.
That is right. But of course, getting the thing won't solve anything because it will make you feel ill. Some people would die as a consequence, probably not straight away. And how taking the vaccine is going to ease the lockdown makes no sense. There's just no argument because, you see, your natural immunity against the so-called virus is 99.5% and the effectiveness of the vaccine when they've tried it on their own probably faked trials or let's say carefully selected trials shows it's less effective than your own immune system. So it's complete madness to take it. It increases the risk of you getting ill. It's mad. People who do it are either deluded or stupid or brainwashed. Now, most of them are brainwashed and they just believe all vaccines are good because Edward Jenner was a clever guy. But you see, these are not vaccines. The message we've got to get across is these are not vaccines. And the modern vaccine story is the pinnacle lie on the top of a pyramid of lies called the COVID con. And there's no need for any of these measures whatsoever in terms of defeating any virus, real or imagined, because we've had more serious cases of flu in the past, and the British economy survived them perfectly well. 1957, there was a genuine problem, which went on for a few months, but Britain went back to work. It was working most of the time during the flu, of course. I mean, there was no damage. This is the stuff they give you is not to solve the cure any virus. It's and the side effects, so-called, on the economy are not side effects. The purpose of these measures is to ruin the economy and bring in a new world order.
This is the great reset.
The virus is a story to cover that up.
Let me ask you this. Everybody knows, everybody listening to this knows that I agree with you. Now, I don't have any qualifications. certainly not any medical or scientific ones. So I agree with you, but it's not based on me having any academic qualifications. It's because I've looked at everything and I've made my own conclusion. However, even though I agree with you, I cannot believe that every academic that goes on to Sky or the BBC or to talk radio is lying. There are too many of them. They're from all over the country, Piers, different men and women, epidemiologists, and I know they're all not lying. I know that many of them believe.
Yeah, they probably do believe, yeah. Well, like they used to believe in climate change, man-made climate change. But if man-made climate change was true, the ice caps would be all melted by now and London would be under 2 feet of water, you know, but it's not. So their predictions were utterly false. It was nonsense. And these are the same type of things. They're alarmist nonsense put out by people that are going to benefit from
it. But if these academics believe it, and they do, the fact is that's almost insurmountable, isn't it? Because however many, I mean, this is, you know, it's funny that certain national talk radio presenters the other day were taking the piss out of this programme and and the numbers, ironically. There isn't a commercial talk radio show in England that has a live audience the size of this programme. I know that to be factual. So it made me laugh that they were taking the piss out of the numbers. I'll put my data up against any other programme in the country.
Oh, yeah. I know, it's true.
You know, you've seen it. So let me ask you this. But the fact is, against the collective of the national media in this country, it's insurmountable when you've got all these academics saying, this is real, you should have the bloody vaccine. What more do we need to do to give people a moment of pause, to make them think harder about it?
Well, you've got to set up local action groups to get the message across, which includes all, you know, alternative media such as yourselves, and we've got special cards to advertise alternative media, but starting with the Richie Allen Show is a good one. But people are giving out leaflets in localities and having meetings and demonstrations and resisting all aspects of the lockdown, such as making sure that, you know, shops that are still running get support and so forth. But in terms of ideas, I agree with you. It is a very hard slog. But you have to go to the basics. I mean, not necessarily scientific, clever stuff, but just straightforward statements. Like the fact is, and this comes from their own data, that you're less likely to get ill by relying on your immune system than you are by having a vaccine. So that's just a fact, right, from their own data. So therefore, if you're doing a vaccine, you're being either stupid or and someone else is benefiting. And of course they are, because then you print the facts about Bill Gates and others. The value of Bill Gates, Zuckerberg and Bezos combined has gone up by £150 billion over the last 6 months.
A point,
pounds for every man, woman and child in the country.
On that,
whereas
Piers,
other values have gone down.
Well, this is interesting now, because on that point, and we've only got about 2.5 minutes left today, but we'll try and schedule some time before Christmas to get you back on. Let's do it again before Christmas. But before you go today, Ian Collins' point when he spoke with you this afternoon was a fairly good point. In again, trying to be the devil's advocate here for a moment, Collins said, why would money motivate somebody like Gates? Gates surely couldn't care less about money if you're worth $75 or $80 or $100 billion. He wouldn't be in it for the money. And I thought Collins made a good point there.
Well, fair enough. But you see, when you've got that sort of money, it isn't the money that counts. It's the power. It's the buzz of being in charge of the other people who've also billionaires. But, you know, he's the top dog and so forth, because he can rule over the lives of more. You know, that's what it's about. I mean, you have to think these people are, you know, they are evil and eugenicists. Bill Gates himself believes in selecting the population.
Yeah.
He believes that there's overpopulation of sub-Saharan Africa.
Yeah.
And implicitly, his policies are racist. You know, and he probably wants to select out the cleverest people to breed. I don't know what he thinks. I really don't know in detail. But he's a eugenicist. He comes from a long line of eugenicists. And the people that want this stuff, both doing it for, I would say you could call them evil and satanic reasons, but or could call them mad Dr. Strangelove reasons,
yeah,
whatever. That's one reason. The other is them and their sidekicks, of course, who will egg them on, will make money out of it. I mean, all right, Bill Gates gets rich. He doesn't need to get rich, but all of his followers and close contacts and sidekicks will become incredibly rich compared with what they were. So they will egg him on. You know, it's a whole machine. And I think the right word to use is it's a machine of evil.
Let's leave it for today. Thanks for coming back. That was the most eventful conversation I've ever had on live radio. It was fantastic.
Yes.
Now, I do think very highly of you, Piers. I do, mate. You're terrific. And you give an example when you're on mainstream media and radio. You give an example on how to conduct yourself when you're being insulted and demeaned. I think you're brilliant at just ignoring it and just getting out what it is you want to say. So
it's the message that counts. Yeah.
It's the message that counts, mate. Folks, go to weatheraction.com, stopnewnormal.net, and please don't support me this month. Support Piers Corbyn. Speak to you before Christmas, mate. Thanks for coming on today.
Thank you very much.
Always, Piers. Piers Corbyn, live on the Richie Allen Radio Show for, Thursday, December 3rd. It is indeed 2020. Weatheraction.com and stopnewnormal.net. Free speech, eh? Doesn't matter whether you agree with somebody or not. It should be heard. And you got degrees and master's degrees in physics and meteorology. You've got every right to be heard, you know, is what I say. What do I know? I know nothing. And I said before, I would never tell you what to do or what not to do. Wouldn't dream of it. And I'm not doing it now. But I'm telling you, not having any degree in any science or in epidemiology or medicine or anything like that, not knowing anything about it, just based on the fact that they're stating nakedly, openly, we don't know what impact it'll have on fertility. Well, you can stick that vaccine up your arse. Stick it where the sun doesn't shine. I'll let my own immune system deal with any respiratory infection that might come my way, because that's what I've been doing for years. I'm an asthmatic. I was never smoked, ever. I've never touched cigarettes. I hate them. Never. But I've had asthma, and sometimes it's bad. And whenever there's a respiratory infection going around, I always get it. Sometimes it knocks me for six, but I get over it. And I think I'm all the better for not taking medication when I get over it. I think I'm all the better for drinking 8 litres of water a day, taking loads of vitamin C and vitamin D, eating loads of greens and smoothies. Smoothies made for me by the future Mrs. Allen. I'll take my chances with that, and I'd prefer not to have anything to do with your vaccine. But that's just my opinion. Wouldn't dream of telling you what to do whatsoever, because that would be wrong. It's very early in the morning somewhere. Back in a minute with Jenny Lowe's. You don't want to miss Jenny. Can't wait to speak with her. The Richie Allen Radio Show, the BBBBBBG. Rather strange song to be playing in the afternoon or in the early evening. I know, but you're look, when did I ever have a brain? It's 9.5 minutes past the hour. Hope you're well this Thursday. Don't forget, tomorrow, I'll be with you tomorrow at 3. There isn't any Sunday show now. You know that, don't you, by now? I'll be with you at 3 tomorrow for the week that was. We'll have a look back at the week that was. I was listening to national radio. I can't remember whether it was LBC. Might have been LBC, might have been Talk Radio a couple of weeks back. And I came across my next guest. A very bright, very articulate lady. I heard that she was a nurse, that she'd worked in the NHS, was a private nurse now. And she was talking about, you know, how NHS workers and staff, how they might respond to a vaccine being rolled out. So I was listening to that with great interest. She worked in the NHS until 2011. She also worked in recruitment for the NHS and in education. And these days works as a private nurse. She's based in Portugal. Lucky her, eh? In Portugal. Let's welcome to the programme Jenny Lowe's. Hey, Jenny, welcome to the show. Thanks for taking the call. How are you?
Hi, Richie. I'm really good, thank you. How are you?
I'm thrilled that you're on. Thanks. I'm really well. It gave me a bit of education today. I should have known, living on the Costa del Sol, that the Portuguese time was the same as ours here in the UK, but I didn't know that. I was a bit sheepish today. So it's really good to have you on. But we're going to just chat generally, I think, because you have a very educated opinion. And I know there was a bit of concern expressed today about a story in the Times about do not resuscitate orders. And you've got a more balanced and rounded opinion on that. So we'll come to that in a minute. But with respect to vaccination, A specialist nurse in the NHS contacted me overnight and said, Richie, I'm just a little bit concerned. The documentation we've been given, those of us that are going to be administering the vaccine to our fellow staff members, on the sheet of information we're given, it tells us that there isn't any information on fertility, but on the information to be given to the patient or the recipient of the jab, there's no information about fertility at all. And Martin said that he'd be very concerned about that. I'm probably putting you a little bit on the spot, Jenny, but is that something that would bother you?
I think with the vaccine at the moment, the one thing that bothers me is that we don't have enough information. And Michael Yeardon and Dr. Wolfgang did a very good piece to the European, I think it was the Medicines Committee. And in there, they wrote that we don't have enough data on whether it can possibly cause infertility or not. So obviously that is a concern because there's been no longer term studies done. So at the moment, the Pfizer vaccine and the Moderna vaccine that everybody is talking about, they're only actually been tested for safety and efficacy for 7 days after the second dose. So the first dose is given and then the second dose is given after 28 days, I believe. And then the safety and efficacy data that they've released is only 7 days post second vaccination. So what it seems like is that they're checking for side effects, like immediate side effects, which could be anything from like full anaphylaxis to just a red area recorded as like an adverse event. But they're not measuring the efficacy, or they're not releasing the data at the moment, the efficacy for longer. So at the moment, we know that between 90 and 95% efficacy at 7 days, but we don't know, say, at 3 months, whether the efficacy is going to be 90 or 95% then. And also, there's not much information on the severity of the disease. And also, it seems like the vaccine will just reduce the symptoms if you do catch COVID. It's not that it will stop you catching COVID-19. It's just that your body is prepped with the mRNA vaccine, which concerns me too, because it's novel and it's not been used in mass vaccination. So I am concerned about the way in which people are talking about the vaccine. I can't see how they are going to roll this vaccine out like they're saying they're going to roll it out, because the trial date doesn't finish until December 2022. So that's the safety and efficacy data, doesn't finish until 2022. So it's only 2 years anyway of efficacy and safety data, which you would expect for a lot of vaccines. You have a lot longer data from the trials and obviously from longer term use. So I am concerned about the vaccine. I am concerned particularly about how it may trigger a bit of an autoimmune crisis in some people, especially with the way in which the vaccine is delivered. So, you know, I have grave concerns about the vaccine, and I think that we just don't have enough information. We don't have enough information on like the trial study design, on we don't even have a copy of the informed consent that was given to the trial participants, which would be very interesting to see. So if anybody has a copy of one of those, I'd love to see it, because I can't even see how they managed to get proper consent for the trial. So it all seems a bit up in the air, really, about the vaccine. And I mean, they're saying they're going to start rolling it out next week, but I honestly can't see it happening. But maybe it will. I don't know.
It's supposed to be. Well, this afternoon it was supposed to be in the tunnel. Unmarked lorries. It's hard to know. I mean, I read all the newspapers, like I'm sure you do. As a journalist, I read them all every day. And the Daily Mail can be sensational at the best of times. But yeah, it claimed that there were lorries in the tunnel, Jenny, and unmarked ones. There was talks of cyber attacks today. But yeah, the press seems to believe that from Monday or Tuesday, and Martin, who is a specialist nurse in the NHS, who will be giving it to colleagues, Martin has been put on alert to be giving it next week. That's not in any way now to say that you're wrong. You might very well be right. They might not be able to do it next week, but they seem to want to.
Well, I think if Martin is going to be the one that's going to be delivering the vaccine, he needs to ensure that absolutely he knows, one, what the ingredients are, two, what the, you know, all I'd want the trial data to be, if I was giving the vaccine now as a nurse, because we are accountable. When we give medication as part of our NMC Code of Professional Conduct, we are accountable for our actions. And if we don't have enough evidence to be able to act in a particular way, we shouldn't do it, because the NMC says that we should not behave in a way that we can't evidence-base. So if I was someone that was being asked to deliver the vaccine to other people, I'd be asking my employers about indemnity, like for themselves, but also to know what kind of information we've got. Because if they're just giving the vaccinators a slip that says, you know, a few things about how the vaccine works and what the side effects are and everything else and the ingredients, but they're not giving them full data, it's going to be very hard to get proper informed consent from the people that are getting the vaccine, receiving the vaccine. And I would feel very, very uneasy.
That's what Martin said, Jenny. Now, this is important. Let me just remind, Jenny Lowes is live on the show from Portugal. Jenny has had a long and successful career as a nurse, worked in the NHS as a nurse, as I said, was involved in recruitment and education for the NHS, is in private practice now. Martin said to me, now this is hearsay, I'm the first to admit that. I don't imagine Martin is lying to me, but I don't know for a fact he's telling the truth. But he did say to his supervisor, at least he told me, he said to the supervisor, listen, I'm a bit worried about giving this to colleagues and maybe in the future to others, when on the sheet for professionals, it mentions fertility, but on the sheet for the recipients, there's no mention of it at all. Informed consent, then, there is a problem. Martin says he was told to wind his neck in. But he now could be a stressed, totally stressed, up to the gills supervisor. I'm sure they're going running around like lunatics with everything that's been going on. But that's what he said. He mentioned informed consent being a problem, and he was told, look, just get on with it, basically.
Yeah, well, I think any nurse, if they're acting in a way that they're not comfortable with, needs to remember that they are regulated by the NMC Code of Professional Conduct. And professionally, you could be in trouble if you're giving something that you don't understand the risks and benefits for, whether that's because you haven't done the research yourself or whether it's because that hasn't been passed down from the service that's making you do the procedure. But I would be, if I was Martin, one, I'd be going to my union, the Royal College of Nursing, straight away. Every nurse should be in a union because it does offer some degree of protection, although they've been fairly quiet about everything that's been going on in the last few months. But they have said, the RCN have said that they don't support the COVID vaccine being mandatory, like the flu vaccine. They recommend that people have it, but they don't say that it should be mandatory. They don't agree with that. So, and I'd also take it to the highest management I possibly could. I'd go to the chief executive. I'd go right to the top and really drill it down to them, because, you know, with the flu vaccines, at least we've got, you know, I don't know how many years of data, but decades of data to be able to look at and balance the risks and understand and be able to try and get informed consent from a patient. But the one thing that really bugs me about informed consent, actually, with all vaccines, is that, I mean, my kids are vaccinated and I took them when they were small, obviously, to be vaccinated. And I'm a nurse and I go into the health service and the medication's already drawn up ready. And they look at the book and they say, right, OK, they need these vaccines. You know, when they're small, they get one in the arm, two in the legs, or two in the arms, two in the legs. And then you get told they might get a fever. They might have a sore area. If this happens, do this. And you're supposed to hang around for a period of time in case of anaphylaxis. But they don't discuss any other stuff about long-term effects of vaccines or anything like that. And I'm absolutely not an anti-vaxxer in terms that I think that all vaccinations are wrong. I don't. I actually think that some vaccinations are valid.
Yeah.
I think the schedule needs reviewing. I think the age in which children are given vaccines needs reviewing. And I think that we need more studies on comparisons between vaccinated and unvaccinated people. There was one out recently, actually, that was quite interesting that was published in November, which said that unvaccinated children are healthier than vaccinated children on whole. And there definitely needs to be some open, transparent discussion about vaccines, and it's just not happening. And the media, I mean, thank God for people like you, Richie, because the media are just whitewashing anybody that tries to even raise a concern. And what I've noticed is last year, a lot of people were, you know, people anti-vaxxers, and they're not very nice about people that are anti-vaccination, which is disgusting to me because it's individual choice. But you know, now people that didn't class themselves as anti-vaxxers are raising concerns about this vaccine, and rightly so. So now I think is a really good time that people start having discussions about vaccinations and about safety, long-term studies, cumulative doses, that kind of thing. Because we as nurses, we don't get told any of that unless you do your own independent research. And you really do your own independent. We're not aware of that because it comes from the top down. So yeah. The Department of Health are obviously, they're telling that this is the vaccination schedule, this is the program, and then it filters down to the people that are delivering it. But I do have concerns about vaccines, and I am pleased that people are discussing them now. I mean, I saw an article in the BBC the other day, and I was absolutely disgusted by it because it was talking about conspiracy theories about vaccines. And you know, it was completely ill-informed. The person that did the research obviously hadn't done that much research, you know, but
I think it was Mariana Spring, I think. Do you know, you've made a good point. You've made several points that I'd like to pick you up on. We've got as much time as you have till the top of the hour. I'm sure you've got better things to do than be speaking to a big baldy gammon like me on the radio. But if I don't pick up on these, I'll be murdered. They've indemnified Pfizer from any potential legal action if something goes wrong. But I think you've just said to me in the last few minutes, Jenny, you're not covered by that. Or the NHS nurse might not be covered by that. Is that your understanding?
I think it would be very shaky ground if a nurse didn't feel like they had enough information themselves to be giving the vaccine to a patient, and they didn't raise it at the time and they gave the vaccine. And if something happened, then potentially the NMC could say, well, okay, well, did you understand this information? Did you understand? You know, the NMC could flip it around a little bit. I don't know how supportive they'd be. But the NMC regulates how we practice. And if you look at the NMC code, there are a lot of things that are going on at the moment that don't allow nurses to fulfill their code. And one of them is about the vaccines, because we just aren't getting the information. I'd love to see if you could be back in touch with, what did you say his name was? Martin?
Martin, yeah.
Martin, and I would love to see the information that he's been given and the information that he's supposed to be giving to the patients, because I used to sit on a research ethics committee, and part of our role was to look at the informed consent, the written information, to see whether it reached the criteria for informed consent.
Jenny, I've had an update from Martin. Martin writes the paperwork that allows the staff to give the vaccine where he's based.
Okay.
He has refused to sign the documentation or put his name anywhere on it. He expressed in several meetings, he expressed concern about the lack of safety data and absent trial data, and was basically called a conspiracy theorist. He has gone to the chief executive. He's listened to this with great interest. And he has been threatened with disciplinary action. As a man with a family, he's very concerned now.
Yeah, but I don't know whether you can get in touch with the NMC, Martin. What a horrible situation for you to be in if you're still listening to this. But I would strongly suggest that you don't obviously put your name to it, because you are raising concerns about it now. I would contact the NMC and ask them for advice. And I think the NMC really need to give advice on this, actually, because they're being quite silent about it at the moment. And there's going to be a lot of people in the same position as Martin. And there's people that are also very concerned, nurses that are on the front line, that they're going to be forced to have the vaccine and they don't want to have it, or they're going to lose their jobs. And I've heard of quite a few nurses resigning over the practice that's happened over the last 9 months.
Yeah.
And I've heard a lot of nurses say that they will resign if they're forced to have the vaccine. So I don't know what's going to happen. And Martin, I don't know if he's got a union, but I would definitely be speaking to the union. And I would probably even, there should be a trust legal representative, a lawyer that works within the trust, to speak to and get legal advice, because this is his professional, you know, registration on the line here. And the trust need to be really, really careful about this, because I don't know if you've heard of the Francis report. Have you heard of the Francis report?
No, I haven't, no.
So it was a big inquiry into the Mid Staffordshire Hospital in the early 2000s. And Sir Francis did the report, and he suggested that anybody that was involved in negligence or shortfallings in care and they caused injury or death in a patient, they could be criminally charged. So I think the trusts need to remember that there, if, you know, in the end, this vaccine is not as safe as they're saying it is, then, you know, they could be running into problems legally with lawsuits. I know that Pfizer has indemnity, but I don't know about the people that are giving it.
That's very important. Let me just remind our listeners, we've got Jenny Lowes on the programme, very experienced nurse, NHS experience for years in nursing and education and in recruitment. Massive amount of questions coming in and comments for you. So I'm going to get to a few of these now. Just want to pick up on something else you said. I'm glad you said it, about studies comparing people who are vaccinated and who weren't. I was lucky enough a couple of years back to speak to Dr. Robert Rowan in California. Now, he's a very well-respected MD, GP in California, and he's been screaming from the rooftops for years to do a study of vaccinated against vaccinated over several years and then have a look at how healthy the unvaccinated are compared to the vaccinated. You kind of hinted at that yourself. That's really, really good. Listeners have been on to say to me, they really love your honesty about vaccines. Of course, you're not anti-vax at all. Vaccines have done good things. They have been very important for us over the years in dealing with certain illnesses. But you did say you're worried about the schedule. You know, one of the most common things, Jenny, I hear from parents is their concern that over recent years, children are getting a lot of different vaccinations in their very early years compared to, say, 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
A lot of parents are really worried about that, and they, you know, these aren't people who, like yourself, they're not anti-vaxxers or conspiracy wackos. They are genuinely wondering, will this have some impact on my son or daughter when he or she are in their 20s or 30s? And they don't know. So a lot of people want you to pick up again on the schedule. Are you talking about the volume of vaccines? Is that what concerns you?
Volume and the time in which they start to give them. So, you know, a child's immune system isn't fully developed until they're two. And, you know, so there is some discussion that people suggest that vaccines shouldn't start being given until the child is two, or they're very much spaced apart and you have longer time in between them. Because the problem isn't the vaccine as such. A lot of the problem that people seem to have post-vaccines is because of the adjuvants that they use. And the adjuvants haven't actually been individually tested themselves in terms of health impact. So things like the aluminium or mercury or the glyphosate that they sometimes put in vaccines. So what I would say to parents is it's absolutely individual choice as to whether or not you get your child vaccinated. And you should seek to understand what the individual risk is for your child. So I don't know exactly in the UK if it's been put on the schedule, but I know it has here. And rotavirus is a new one that's been put on the schedule here in Portugal. And rotavirus, my child had rotavirus when he was a year old, and it was a bad gastrointestinal virus. And he was unwell for about 6 days, but I still wouldn't have vaccinated him for that virus because he was robust. I was breastfeeding him at the time. I was keeping a close eye on him. So even like if I look back, would I have vaccinated against the rotavirus? No. And the rotavirus, you know, it's one of those things that kids do get. And for the most part, most kids are, you know, it's a mild gastrointestinal illness. And, you know, you might not even know that the kids have had it. Obviously, if people are immunocompromised or there's a problem where it could really badly affect them, it might be a suggestion to have it. But chickenpox as well is another one that's a new one that's been put on the schedule here. And, you know, we all had chickenpox as kids.
Yeah.
Do we actually really need that vaccine or not? These are the discussions that desperately need to be had. And I started looking at this probably a couple of years ago. And then in October last year, I saw it was a video on YouTube, which was experts at the World Health Organization talking on camera about the safety of vaccines. And I started to think, why is it that they're all sat in there, these experts, and they're all talking about their concerns about vaccines and about safety data and about vaccine hesitancy and all different things? But if you're a member of the public or you're a health professional or just, you know, someone random, you can't question it at all. It's like you're accused of being dangerous, that you're going to kill people, that, you know, is so emotive, the subject of vaccines, that...
That's shocked you, hasn't it? That's shocked you, the development of that, or the advent of this hysterical criticism of anybody asking questions. That it seems to have really shocked you, that, you know, that you get treated like that when you just ask a fairly decent, a fairly simple question.
Well, I tell you, I posted that that video on Facebook, and the next day I got a phone call from the health centre asking me to go down to show them my child's vaccination records. Because they had on their computer, they had that he hadn't had them, but he had. He'd had them all because I got the vaccine booklet out and went through all of them with her. And he's now 9, but he had them all up to the age of 5. And so I was quite shocked by that because I don't know how that happened. I don't know if a friend phoned this or a teacher or whoever was on my Facebook, or it was some kind of weird Facebook algorithm that sent the data to the health centre. I don't know. But the same thing happened about... 2 months later, they phoned me again after I'd posted something again about vaccines. So the censorship is unreal, unreal. And you have to think why that is, because if they were so confident,
it wouldn't matter,
you know,
would it?
In the product, they would let people discuss it. And, you know, any other medication would go through a lot longer, more robust clinical trials than this vaccine has, this particular one. So, you know, there are a lot of doubts about it. But the other video that I posted that they then phoned me was a 9-hour deposition of someone called Stanley Plotkin. And he's like, they call him the godfather of vaccines. And he was, it was from 2018. He was on under oath being questioned by a lawyer in a case about a vaccine injury. And I would urge anybody to go and watch it because there is so much information in there. And it makes you really think, like, you know, it really opened my eyes, because I'll tell you, as a nurse, we got pharmacology training when we were training, but we hardly had anything about vaccines at all. Not hardly anything, like probably one day or something.
One
like
day,
that.
Is that right? One day. We've got one final message from Martin. I'll read that in a second. But you've also touched on something there with you getting the call from the health centre. I know, because I've been doing this particular show now since 2014, I do get occasional emails from people who say that they would prefer not to give their youngsters the measles vaccine. Not because they believe, you know, and genuinely, some of them say, I do worry about autism. And they say, Richie, you know, whether Wakefield was right or wrong, look, it doesn't matter. Some of them say to me then, they say, I'm not worried about autism at all, Richie. I just think he or she should get the measles, if at all possible, and, you know, get the robust immune system. But here's the kicker. They're worried about that leading to social services visitations to the house. They're worried about somebody thinking that maybe the child is in danger and maybe that might lead to them being separated from their own children. Now, I would have said some years ago, I worked in commercial radio and national radio for years. If somebody said that to me, I would have said, you're a stupid conspiracy theorist. The state's not going to be taking your children if they're not vaccinated. But in some cases, it has happened.
Well, I mean...
We don't have to go down that road.
The threat of having your children taken away from you is a coercive factor, and it completely invalidates consent. So it's really scary that we've got to that point. And, you know, parents should be able to make their own autonomous choices about their children, and people should be able to make their own choices for themselves as well. And, you know, nobody knows your children better than you do. And like you say, some people just want to give the vaccine split, or they don't want to give the triple MMR like they do now. And actually, I revisited Andrew Wakefield recently, and Andrew Wakefield never recommended that nobody took the MMR vaccine. What he recommended was that it was split into separate doses, and they destroyed him for that. And his data from the, it was terrible what they've done to Andrew Wakefield, actually, I believe.
He's been on with me a few times over the years, and I like him. He's been on with me a few times over, I don't know whether he's right or wrong, but I like speaking to people that are banned. And he's been on with me, and I like him. And I'm always mindful of the fact that his initial findings were peer reviewed and accepted and were rubber stamped. And people forget that.
Yeah.
It's important to say that, as you're saying there now.
And also he was a physician and he was seeing lots of patients, lots of children with like inflammatory bowel conditions. And that's why he started to look at it. It wasn't that he was trying to, you know, destroy vaccinations. He just wanted to understand why so many children were coming to his clinic that were unwell. And the autism thing, like, you know, they've said that there's no direct link. But you only have to look at the autism rates, and they're predicting in USA by 2035, one in two children will be diagnosed with autism. Now, something's causing that.
One in two.
You know, it's not just better diagnosis, for God's sake, is it? I mean, why are they going to say it's one in two by 2035? I mean, it's just unbelievable to think like that. Obviously, there's other things like diet, air quality, water quality, all those different things that can impact, and genetics and everything else. But that statistic is quite scary. And I think that that alone should mean that we are able to talk about it and that we should, you know, have transparency and reassurance, because really that's all parents want and people want is reassurance. But, you know, this whole thing with the COVID vaccine being rolled out, it's not just the vaccine that worries me. It's the fact that they're rolling it out with the saying that we need it based upon the PCR testing, which we know is not that accurate. So, you know, we're kind of doing an action based upon information that we don't know is completely accurate anyway. So do we need it as much as they say we do when, you know, the survival rate is 99.9 in people under 50 with no other medical conditions? So, you know, there's a lot that needs to be talked about. But this complete whitewashing of politicians talking about anti-vaxxers and being dangerous and, you know...
Hey, do you see what's happening, Jenny? One of the things that's happening is really maddening for me. Any time it's brought up, they talk about microchips and Gates. That's disgusting. Yes. Because if you do, you know, a very basic look around Facebook or around Twitter, you're not seeing people talking about microchips and Gates. You're talking about people who, they're not as articulate as you, they don't have your training, but they're saying, hey, this is a bit quick, isn't it? That's what they're saying. They're not saying microchips and Gates and sterilisation. They're saying this is very quick. And they're right to be concerned about that.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. And that BBC article that I referred to earlier, that had something about that, about 5G and microchipping and Bill Gates. And I almost think they're doing it deliberately, because then if like your family and friends talks about vaccinations, they're, oh, it's a conspiracy theory about microchipping, don't worry. But they're getting off the main point. And the main point is, do we need it? Are we going to be able to give proper informed consent? Do we have enough information? You know, those are the real questions. What are the longer term effects? How long is the efficacy going to last for? You know, what about vulnerable patients? As far as I'm aware, the trials have only included healthy volunteers under a certain age. So we don't know, you know, if they're going to be giving that to patients that have got multiple medical conditions or that are frail and elderly. We don't have any data on that. So we don't have any data on children. We don't have any data on pregnant women. So, you know, there just isn't enough data. And that's the basic point. And for the politicians and these celebrities like Piers Morgan and things like that, that are just spouting out all this information as if you can't question, you can't say anything that's negative about that. They call you dangerous. They say that, you know, you're a conspiracy tinfoil hat wearer and things like that. And I've had it on my own Facebook feed. I've had a few discussions with people on my own Facebook. But from what I can see, I was on, there was an NHS group for Workers for Choice for the vaccine, and I was on that group. I actually got blocked. I don't know why. Because I wasn't posting anything. I don't know why I got blocked. I suspect that the group was probably infiltrated at some point. But anyway, but most people on there are saying that they don't want it. And the response to even my friends. So yesterday I posted on Facebook about needing more information and to make sure that you have enough information to give consent. And six of my nursing friends replied on there saying that they don't want to take it, but they think they're going to be forced to.
They must be incredibly stressed then. How stressful is that for them, thinking, I don't want this, but I expect to be told to have it? That's terrible, that.
Yeah, the only thing I think that the NHS probably could apply is that at the moment, if you work in theatres, for example, you need to prove your hepatitis B immunity, or you need to have the vaccine if you're doing something called exposure prone procedures. So occupational health would exclude you from working in that area if you either couldn't prove immunity or you refused to have the vaccine. So I don't know whether that's the route they're going to go down with the NHS. You know, you're working in ICU, ED, respiratory wards. It might be that part of the employment contract is that they have to have the vaccine. But at the moment, as far as I'm aware, the trusts are saying it's mandatory. I haven't heard of any trusts that have said that it's being compulsory, because I think they know that if they did that, there would be a lot of resistance to it. So the flu jab at the moment, they do encourage it, but you don't have to take it. So a lot of people are kind of thinking like that, especially the ones that don't take the flu vaccine, are thinking, well, hang on a minute. I work every year with flu and I don't take the flu vaccine. Do I need the COVID vaccine? But what's very telling about the nurses that have said that they don't want it is one's an infection control sister. One's a respiratory sister. She works on a respiratory ward and has been working with COVID patients all year. And another one is an intensive care nurse. Now, you know, if they're saying they don't want the vaccine, there's a reason there. They've been on the front line, so you would expect that they'd be desperate for the vaccine. I took the swine flu vaccine when I was pregnant because I was working with swine flu patients, and that was a horrible year, Richie. It was 2010 to 2011. So it was the winter after the pandemic supposedly ended, which was in the August. And we had patients nursed in corridors. We had patients ventilated in recovery and A&E. We lost a pregnant woman. We lost some very young patients. And we had patients that were waiting to go on ECMO beds, which are specialist respiratory beds, and they didn't have beds. And it didn't make the news that we managed. It was a horrible winter. But because of that fear that I had, because, I resuscitated a pregnant woman that had swine flu. So it really stuck with me. Yeah. And I decided to have the vaccine. But I decided that it took me weeks to decide to have it. But I took an autonomous, informed choice to do so. And I think that is the take-home point about the vaccines, is that we absolutely have a right to autonomous consent, informed consent. And to have true consent, you need to be free from coercion. You need to have all the information in front of you to make a decision, and you need to have capacity. So assuming somebody has capacity, they should be able to refuse the vaccine, because it goes against anything that was set out in the Nuremberg trials or the Human Rights Act or even the Mental Capacity Act. So there is protection in law. The only way they can make it mandatory is under the Public Health Act, I think, the 1984, which is ironic that it was passed in 1984.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Is that they can say that it's a public health risk and that everybody should. But I don't think they're ever going to be in a position to force mandatory vaccinations. But
what about what Zahawi said? I know you're coming to this. And I also want to ask you about that story in the Times in the 10 minutes we have left. I know you're coming to this. Nadeem Zahawi, who's been given the responsibility of rolling out the vaccine programme, they're speaking with forked tongues, some of these politicians. Some of them are saying, like Gove, oh, we're not planning on coercing people into taking it. But he says it'll happen through the private sector. And Jonathan Van Tam, deputy chief medical officer, told Rachel Burden on Radio 5 Live this morning that, well, we don't know yet. We'll see how things pan out. You know, you can't go to the cinema, you can't go and watch Sporting, exactly. Lisbon or whoever it is in Portugal or whatever, unless you have it. So it might happen. The coercion.
Yeah, I think it might. I don't know if they'll force the vaccine, but like you say, they might force that you have to prove immunity. And that's even worse almost. It's because that's coercive. That's a coercive factor again. Yeah. And there's so much bias as well with this, because like I looked the other day at the MHRA, the agency that protects medicines, that's supposed to regulate the medicines and the machinery and stuff like that. And they'd put out an AI a tender for an AI program, which I'm sure that you've seen, that said that they need to cope with an expected influx of adverse events when they start doing the mass vaccination programs. So I looked a little bit at the MRHA, and they take grants from Bill Gates. So how that's independent, it just is so murky, the whole thing. You know, there's so many links. Every route you do go down, you seem to get to Bill Gates. I know that we were saying that earlier about the conspiracy, but it is almost, when you look at things, he's behind it somehow. Like, there's been some grants given somewhere, or, and it's not truly independent. You know,
it can't be. Well, what's her name? June Raine. So June Raine is the CEO. Went to Oxford. Oxford is funded to the tune of massive amounts of money by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. When she wasn't CEO, she was working for the MHRA when they were given an enormous amount of money by Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to look into pregnancy and health and all of that. He funds the World Health Organization more than any other individual nation state. His fingerprints are everywhere, and it is something to look into. But then you listen to talk radio. Today you listen to LBC, and Bill is lovely. He's just a benevolent billionaire, and we're crazy conspiracy theorists. Listen, I want you just mentioned something very important, and I'm watching the clock too. I was phoned last night by Amanda in Northumbria, or Northumberland, I can't remember where, on a farm. Smart lady. She picked up on that AI search to prepare for an avalanche, or at least a big cascade of people who have adverse effects by the jab. Again, that should be national news headlines.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, because it's a huge conflict of interest.
Isn't
and
it?
Don't forget, they're the agency that just passed the approval for it to be able to be rolled out. So, you know, even the EU are saying that it's too fast and that it shouldn't be being rolled out yet. But, I mean, in Portugal, they're saying that they're going to start rolling it out in, like, January. So let's see what happens. But I would just say to people, I'm not going to tell people never to take a vaccine. It's up to them, but just to do their own research. But did you want to talk about the DNR thing? Because did we...
Can we do that now? It's exactly 13 minutes to 7. We've got about 7 or 8 minutes left. So I'll shut up and let you say what you want to say. But before you do that, let me just briefly give the story. Every news media outlet covered this today. The Times ran with fears raised over blanket orders not to resuscitate. 40 complaints were made to the Care Quality Commission about these orders, these do not resuscitate orders, and that they were put on patients without consulting the patients themselves or their family members. And this was blamed on pressures in the first wave of coronavirus. And a lot of people who listen to programmes like this, they say, eugenics, Richie, eugenics. It's terrible. It seems as the years go by, somebody is trying to make it easier, you know, to let people slip away or to let people die. I know you think that there's more to it than that, Jenny. So I'll let you give us your take on that. What did you make of that story?
Well, first of all, let me just tell you what normally happens in a hospital. So if you have a patient that's dying or that is unlikely to recover, you can still treat the patient. So you can still give fluids and medication and everything else. But you might then introduce a discussion about do not resuscitate orders. And usually what happens is it is done in discussion with the patient and the family. But essentially, it is a doctor's decision based upon the patient's best interests. So that's what usually happens when a doctor is considering whether a patient should be for resuscitation or not for resuscitation. And not being for resuscitation does not mean not for treatment. It means that if in the event of a cardiac arrest, we would not jump up and down on the patient's chest and try and intubate and ventilate them. And I'll give you an example. Say you've got a 97-year-old man with chronic obstructive airway disease, really bad lung disease, a really bad pneumonia, and you're treating them with antibiotics, steroids, fluids, giving nutrition, doing everything that you could be. But his oxygenation isn't improving. So you're giving them the respiratory support that you need on the ward. But if the patient deteriorated further, would they be for intensive care? This is what they usually think. So there is criteria for admission to intensive care, and intensive care is a resource that they have to manage, obviously. So you can't admit everybody into intensive care because there just isn't those facilities. What they would think was, is this patient for ventilation? And this patient, for example, would be very difficult to wean off a ventilator, almost impossible in some cases. So then you've got a patient on a ventilator that's been will be on a ventilator for years. In that case, what they might say is that it's futile to do CPR, because if you started CPR, you'd put a tube down the patient's throat to be able to give breaths. And then if you've got the patient back, where are you going to take them? Because ICU criteria doesn't fit. So there are decisions made like that all the time. And they should absolutely be done in consideration with the patient's wishes and the family's wishes. But actually, in law and in ethics, it says that the ultimate decision does lie with the doctor in terms of futility. So this talk about this article that was on, I understand why they were looking at do not resuscitate orders. However, all patients should already have that decided if they were already frail. Do you see what I mean? So say you've got patients in a nursing home, that should already be decided in discussion with the relatives before it gets to the point where the patient has a cardiac arrest. Because I used to be an advanced life support instructor, and I was part of the cardiac arrest team. And, you know, not even in hospital, not that many cardiac arrests get resuscitated successfully. And if they do, by the time, you know, they don't often get out of hospital, and they end up with more morbidity, so more injuries, more issues to deal with. And it can be quite undignified. So, you know, I've broken ribs when I've been doing CPR. It's not nice. It's really undignified. So if someone was frail and towards the end of their life, a DNR order is not always a bad thing, because you can allow a patient to have a death that isn't traumatic. And it's almost like birth, you know, I believe that birth and death should be eased in as they should. But back to the original point, the blanket DNR should not have happened. It shouldn't have happened. That's wrong. It shouldn't have happened, because it should be based on clinical need. And if it has happened and the doctors can't justify why they put that patient do not resuscitate, then questions definitely should be asked. And, you know, it should be being investigated.
That's a brilliant answer, and I totally understand that. And you've explained that very well as to how that works, and I don't have a problem with it. I would ask you this. It's been expressed to me in recent years by people who have relatives who are moving into care homes, who are in fairly decent health, that they're very worried. They don't like the fact that fairly healthy seniors are asked to discuss DNRs. They don't like that. That doesn't sit well with a lot of people. They don't feel that it's ethical or that it's nice. And they think that people are being asked to consider something that they can't possibly imagine, because at the moment they're fairly healthy. I don't know if you have any opinion on that.
Well, I think it's discussions that everybody should have, actually. I think that people should discuss it with their family now. Like, why wait until somebody's sick before you start talking about it? Because most people have an opinion. Like, if I'm really sick, I don't want to be resuscitated. You know, if I'm dying, especially if I've got a terminal illness, perhaps.
Yeah.
But again, they're difficult discussions to have, that, and they should be had when the patient is at the right stage, but discuss it with your family as well before, so you know what people's wishes are. So I know that, like, my mum said to me, if I have a massive stroke and, you know, I can't speak or do anything, don't resuscitate me. You know, keep me comfortable, keep me alive, but don't resuscitate me. Like, don't continue that pain. And that, you know, resuscitation is a very emotive subject, again, like vaccines. You know, there's a lot of religious aspects, obviously, as well. And that's why these blanket DNR orders just are not right, because it should be based on individual patient. And, you know, we don't always discuss it with the patient. Sometimes the patient's too unwell to discuss it with them. Yeah, do you understand what I mean? But if they're going into hospitals, you know, it's on the nursing documentation a lot of the time that you should discuss what their thoughts would be about it. And I think we should, in a way, because at least then you're asking the patient when they're, you know, they have capacity to think about it. But it's the way in which it's done, and it's a very skilled thing to do, to talk to relatives and patients about that, because it's a very sensitive subject.
I can't even imagine. And I'll say this before I ask you the final question, because we've got to wrap it up today. I would like to think that doctors and nurses, senior doctors and senior nurses, would never allow themselves to be put in a position where they're making these decisions based on occupancy in the hospital or pressures like that. I don't want to believe that. Now, I know some of my listeners do believe that, and that's fair enough. I don't want to believe that. I want to believe that nurses and doctors are like you, that they love people and want to do the absolute best for people. Thanks for saying that. What I wanted to ask you was, and we didn't have time to get into it today, is in the early new year, if you're up to it, one of the things I didn't mention when I was explaining who you are and what you've done, you've had a successful career, and you've done a lot of really interesting things, education and obviously recruitment. But since you moved into private practice, or even before, you've you've started to look towards holistic practice and treating causes of illness rather than treating illness itself, which of course on a radio show like this, my listeners are very interested in all of that, and I'd love to chat with you about that in the near future if you fancied it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I've gone completely the opposite direction now. And the NHS does some amazing work, and they have, you know, the majority of people that work in it, and I know people are angry at the moment about what's been happening, but the majority of people that work in it are good people, and they want to do the right thing. I think that this situation put a lot of pressure on a lot of people, and, you know, there was a lot coming from the top down. But yeah, I very much now look at the other side of things. The NHS tends to be a bit of a sticking plaster and treats the symptoms rather than the underlying cause. And there is a lot of evidence and research about, you know, holistic care and looking at the root cause of disease and trying to understand the reasons behind why that disease has progressed. You know, it's the future, I think. I think that especially this period, people are starting to look at their own health and their own responsibility for their own health. And, you know, a lot of people rely on, and it's been programmed into us, that if you're sick, you go to a doctor.
Yeah.
And it's been relied that we give our health to somebody else, when actually we're all responsible for our own health. We're responsible for what we put in our mouths and how we live our lives and, you know, what we do, really. So I think there will be a bit of a change furthermore towards holistic and alternative therapies. And I think they can go hand in hand. They don't have to be completely separate. You know, from a surgical point of view, an emergency point of view, the NHS does amazing work. But for chronic diseases, I think it falls short because people aren't getting better. People aren't, you know, people are living longer, but they're living longer with disease. Yeah. So, you know, we need to optimize people's health, and we can undo people's health. Because if people look into epigenetics is a fascinating subject, which shows how the environment you give your body expresses as a disease. And there are very simple things, you know.
The environment you give your body expresses it as a disease. That's a fascinating... Listen, I'll tell you what, Jenny, right? We are out of time. I've got to wrap this up and get it on the rerun. It runs on a loop on various websites and stuff like that. It's been an education speaking with you today. Thanks for giving us as much of your time as you have done and being so candid about vaccines and this vaccine and everything else. And I've loved listening to you. Merry Christmas to you and yours in Portugal there.
You too, Richie. And to keep up the good work, and thanks for contacting me.
Not at all. let's talk holistic medicine and holistic approach in January. I'd love to do that.
Yeah, okay. Great. Thanks very much, Jenny.
Bye for now. Thanks. Wasn't that absolutely brilliant? Jenny Lowe's there, live from Portugal, years as an NHS nurse, on the hospital wards, went into recruitment for the NHS, educating overseas nurses, big into a holistic approach, very eloquently speaking about a number of issues there, including the concerns she would have about this new Pfizer BioNTech vaccine and what we don't know about it particularly. And just before we go, bombshell information at the top of this programme, that the MHRA documentation given to those who will be administering the vaccine says that there is no information, or it is unknown what impact the new vaccine will have on fertility. That's the bombshell. They acknowledge it is unknown, but the worst thing about that is they're telling that to those who will be administering it. They are keeping that information away from those who will be given that particular jab. Amazing. Thanks so much to Jenny in Portugal, Nurse Jenny, and to Piers Corbin, weatheraction.com. Help out Piers Corbin if you can. Bye now.